This is number three. Jesus took a risk and placed himself in a vulnerable position with his disciples. They themselves marveled at the situation. They just couldn't understand it. This just wasn't the accepted thing for a good Jew to do. This woman at the well became the first person to whom Jesus publicly revealed his messiahship. When the woman went back to Sychar, telling the townspeople what she had seen and heard, Jesus used the opportunity to teach his disciples. As a result of Jesus' willingness to place himself in a risky and vulnerable situation, a whole city believed on him. What a powerful lesson for the disciples. They were actually there, and they actually saw it all happen right before their very eyes. There are various other instances, such as eating grain and healing on the Sabbath, that place Jesus in vulnerable situations, which he used to teach his disciples. It should be pointed out at this point that Jesus affirms both genders. Although there were no women among the 12, many women followed Jesus and followed the 12 faithfully. Martha and Mary were faithful followers, and it was the women who first reported Christ's resurrection from the grave. Even here in John chapter 4, we discover that a woman was the first person to whom Jesus publicly revealed his identity. Mentoring is for all persons, regardless of gender. Whether you are a male or a female, you can mentor or be mentored. In addition to teaching knowledge and values, modeling leadership, and risking vulnerability, Jesus also trusts his mentorees with the knowledge and skills he shared with them. Jesus trusted his disciples with tasks that utilized their learning from him. The disciples often felt unprepared for the task awaiting them, but Jesus prodded them to go on and live out his teaching in actual experience. In Matthew chapter 10, Jesus instructs his disciples and sends them out for ministry. In Luke chapter 10, Jesus instructs the 70 and sends them out, two by two, in ministry situations. And in Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 through 20, we read, "And Jesus came up and spoke to them, saying, All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." Jesus is no longer sending out 10. He's no longer sending out the 70. He is, in actuality, sending every one of his followers out in ministry. In other words, Jesus is trusting you, and he is trusting me with his teaching. He'll be there to help us for sure. But the fact that he sends us out reveals that he is trusting us with his gospel and with his teaching. An essential ingredient for learning is allowing the pupil, or in this case, the mentoree, experiences and opportunities to begin to live out and play out the teaching that he or she has heard and seen in the mentor. All of the mentoring functions were carried out as the disciples spent time with Jesus. They were with him on the mountain, and they were with him in the valley, in the cities, and in the countryside, on the water and on the land, staying in a home, and even walking through a grain field. They observed his life. He encouraged, he built up, and he stretched the faith of his disciples. He modeled a way of life for them. Jesus must have done a pretty good job because his disciples turned the whole world upside down, and Christianity spread rapidly. Jesus certainly is the divine mentor. The biblical data not only records for us that Jesus mentored his own disciples, but it also provides examples of others who used mentoring to teach and train others. One prominent example of this is Moses mentoring Joshua. At the time of the Exodus, Joshua was a young, impressionable man with outstanding qualities who, with the right training and the blessing of the Lord, could be tremendously used to advance the kingdom of God. The Bible introduces Joshua as a field commander under Moses in Israel's battle against Amalek, a military engagement that occurred shortly after the Exodus. Even in this beginning episode, we see mentoring in progress. Exodus chapter 17, verses 8 through 16. Then Amalek came and fought against Israel at Rephidim. So Moses said to Joshua, "Choose men for us and go out, fight against Amalek. Tomorrow I will station myself on the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand." And Joshua did as Moses told him, and fought against Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. So it came about when Moses held his hand up that Israel prevailed. And when he let his hand down, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands were heavy. Then they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on one side and one on the other. Thus his hands were steady until sunset. So Joshua overwhelmed Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Write this in a book as a memorial, and recite it to Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven." And Moses built an altar and named it, "The Lord is my banner." And he said, "The Lord has sworn, the Lord will have war against Amalek from generation to generation." Even in the realm of military obligations, Moses provides leadership and guidance to Joshua. He uses vulnerable military positions as opportunities to demonstrate truth, and he even trusts Joshua with Israel's army. You see, Moses is mentoring Joshua. In verse 9, Moses places the responsibility of choosing fighting men in the hands of Joshua. Moses says, "Choose men for us and go out, fight against Amalek." Just as Jesus entrusted his disciples with the truths that he taught them, so Moses trusts Joshua. But knowing the responsibility of a mentor, Moses also stands with him, allowing Joshua the victorious battlefield experience while he handles the staff of God. In verse 9, Moses tells Joshua, "Tomorrow I will station myself on the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand." Even in this military scenario, we see the mentor and mentoree working together. As Moses' hands were in the air, Joshua would be winning. But while his hands were down, Joshua would be losing the battle. Moses placed Joshua in a very vulnerable position. Yet it really didn't matter how skillful one was. If Moses' hands were down, the tide would turn against you. But as long as they were raised, victorious momentum was on your side. Joshua saw firsthand from Moses that victory and defeat are in the hands of the Lord. Man's abilities, man's wisdom, and man's might were no match for God's power. One day, Moses would be gone, and Joshua would take his place. It is appropriate to learn from your mentor the reality of relying on God for victory and for success. Possibly with this in mind, the Lord tells Moses in verse 14 to write this in a book as a memorial. But that's not all. The Lord specifically instructs Moses to recite it to Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. Knowing what the future held for Joshua, God speaks to him through Moses, the mentor. Modeling the proper response to God's marvelous battlefield victory, Moses then builds an altar in verse 15 and names it, "The Lord is my banner." This is a tremendous learning experience for Joshua that helps prepare him to be used by the Lord in the future. In addition to the military realm, Joshua is also presented in the Bible as a spiritual disciple of Moses. Let's examine some passages that speak of their mentoring situation in this particular context. When Moses ascended Mount Sinai to receive for the first time the two tables, Joshua, who is called his servant or his minister, accompanied him part of the way and kept watch. Exodus chapter 24, verses 13 through 18, reads as follows. So Moses arose with Joshua his servant, and Moses went up to the mountain of God. But to the elders he said, Wait here for us until we return to you. And behold, Aaron and Hur are with you. Whoever has a legal matter, let him approach them. Then Moses went up to the mountain, and the cloud covered the mountain. And the glory of the Lord rested on Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it for 6 days. And on the seventh day, he called Moses from the midst of the cloud. And to the eyes of the sons of Israel, the appearance of the glory of the Lord was like a consuming fire on the mountaintop. And Moses entered the midst of the cloud as he went up to the mountain. And Moses was on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. This was an historic event in the life of Israel. This was a time when Moses would be with God on the mountain. But notice who he takes with him. Joshua, his servant. In verse 14, he tells his elders, Wait here until we return to you. Mentor and mentoree climbing the mountain together. I wonder what they talked about during their climb together. It certainly wasn't trivial matters such as, Boy, Joshua, sure hope the weather holds up. Moses was probably using the time to teach his mentoree. Even though Joshua was not allowed to go all the way with Moses, no one else even came close to going as far as Joshua. They were together, walking a mountain toward God. Joshua was being mentored in spiritual things through this special privilege of walking up the mountain and keeping watch for his mentor. When Moses came down from the mountain, Joshua was the first to warn him of the impending situation. In Exodus chapter 32, verse 17, we read, Now when Joshua heard the sound of the people as they shouted, He said to Moses, "There is a sound of war in the camp." Even though they were far from the camp, Moses discerned that it was not the cry of triumph or the cry of defeat, but it was rather the sound of singing. In response to the golden calf incident, Joshua was about to see the righteous anger of a man deeply devoted to God. Sin has no place in the camp of God, and it must have come as a shock for young Joshua to see a nation so quickly turn against the God who had so miraculously delivered them from the bonds of slavery. Leaders must act against sin, even though they realize the cost is often heavy. In the very next section, chapter 33, we find another mentoring situation. After the hideous golden calf incident, we read these words in Exodus chapter 33, verses 1 through 11. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, "Depart, go up from here, you and the people whom you have brought up from the land of Egypt, to the land of which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, 'To your descendants I will give it.' And I will send an angel before you, and I will drive out the Canaanite, the Amorite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Go up to a land flowing with milk and honey, for I will not go up in your midst, because you are an obstinate people, lest I destroy you on the way." When the people heard this sad word, they went into mourning, and none of them put on his ornaments. For the Lord had said to Moses, "Say to the sons of Israel, 'You are an obstinate people. Should I go up in your midst for one moment, I would destroy you. Now therefore, put off your ornaments from you, that I may know what I will do with you.'" So the sons of Israel stripped themselves of their ornaments from Mount Horeb onward. Now Moses used to take the tent and pitch it outside the camp, a good distance from the camp, and he called it the Tent of Meeting. And it came about that everyone who sought the Lord would go out to the Tent of Meeting, which was outside the camp. And it came about, whenever Moses went out to the tent, that all the people would arise and stand, each at the entrance of his tent, and gaze after Moses until he entered the tent. And it came about, whenever Moses entered the tent, the pillar of cloud would descend and stand at the entrance of the tent. And the Lord would speak with Moses. When all the people saw the pillar of cloud standing at the entrance of the tent, all the people would arise and worship, each at the entrance of his tent. Thus the Lord used to speak to Moses face to face just as a man speaks to his friend. When Moses returned to the camp, his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, would not depart from the tent. Joshua's mentor was the leader of the Israelite people. Whether the people moved or whether they stayed depended on what the Lord spoke through Moses as he met with God. Joshua saw Moses, his mentor, walk to the tent and then watch the Lord descend upon the tent in a pillar of cloud to speak with him. Verse 11 tells us that the Lord used to speak to Moses face to face, just as a man speaks to his friend. Now that's a type of relationship with God I yearn to have. After Moses would leave the tent and return to camp, his mentoree, Joshua, would not depart from the tent.